And you really wonder why they call it the silly season. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
And as always, Barry, it's good to be back with you here. It's good insofar as it's getting warmer, but it's not so good considering the stuff that I'm seeing going on out there in everything. It's not just in, you know, you're mentioning the silly season. It's not just in politics. It's in the church. It's in everything that's going on right now. But I'm still happy to be here.
Well, but you did say it is getting warm out there.
That's true.
And you know, I know that we've just now crossed over into April, and so, you know, everybody's thoughts on spring planning and getting out of doors after this long and dreary winter season. And Chuck, it is getting warm, not only temperature-wise, but, you know, politically as well, because the silly season isn't the fact that you blew your bracket on the NCAA men's basketball finals.
Which apparently everybody did. Yeah.
But that you're being inundated right now with phone calls and knocks on the door and radio commercials and television ads and things stuffed in your mailbox, all about politics, all about political races and candidates and campaigns and who's done this and who hasn't done that. And you know, well, that's an area where I thrive, so I kind of enjoy it in one sense. Maybe I need a little psychological help, Chuck. I don't know. But it also is great fodder for what we do on here in the radio program, because there's always some interesting things to bring up, especially around an election cycle. Now, as many of you may know, this is the state election cycle year. Because on the even-numbered years, 2 years after the presidential cycle, we have our state-level cycle, where all of the statewide offices, from governor to treasurer, are up for election, as well as all members of the State House of Representatives and half the members of the Ohio Senate. Plus, we have a number of local races, and especially in this cycle and in this environment, Chuck, it's interesting we're going to be talking about the environment today. And that is a number of what's called central committee races. Now, most voters have never heard of the central committee, and that's because it's just a party structure. Each county, each party of the major, mainly of the major two parties, although maybe the Libertarians are starting to build something like this, and I know the CP wanted to at one time, but it couldn't quite get enough.
We need to tell people what the CP is.
Well, yeah, of course, the Constitution. Party.
We tend occasionally we forget and talk in jargon.
Shorthand. In shorthand.
CP is short for the Constitution Party, which Barry and I.
We were formerly officers of until
8 years ago.
Oh, has it even been that
it's
long?
It's been 2006.
Oh, my goodness. It has been that long.
Yeah, it has.
Oh, well, you know, it's bad memories don't ever seem to go away.
It's a good thing to be thrown out of an organization for being too pro-life for it.
Well, yeah, that kind of happens. But when we have the central committees, now what those are is in each county in Ohio, the way we've structured in Ohio, in each county, both the major parties have a organizational body called the Central Committee. Well, there's also the Executive Committee, but that's usually made up of the high rollers and the people who are the ones doing the establishment work for the party. but the Central Committees are usually made up of a man or a woman in each precinct or ward in that county. Now, in Franklin County, in Columbus area, I believe there's 140 or so members of the Central Committee. So there's another 140 seats on the County Republican or County Democratic Central Committee. And in a county like Cuyahoga and Cleveland, there's over 700. You know, there are more members of the Cuyahoga County Central Committee than there are members of the Ohio Legislature. Okay, just to give you kind of an idea on this.
Well, it sounds like everybody who's a Republican in Cuyahoga County is on the Central Committee.
That could be very well be the case. But the key is, though, ladies and gentlemen, these people, many of them who are your neighbors, whether it's the Republicans or the Democrats, because a precinct is fairly small. A ward's a little bit bigger, but a precinct may only be two or three streets in your local community. And if you live out in the country, it may be, you know, 2 or 3 miles of area, with all the people who reside in that area being in that precinct. And if they align with one of those two major parties, then that person represents, supposed to represent their interest on the Central Committee. Now, what does the Central Committee do? Well, most people would say not much, but they are
in
they,
fight. Yeah,
but,
or
but,
in
but
fight.
They do have a purpose, and their purpose is to select candidates to put on the ballot. That's really the only job of a Central Committee, is to screen people who want to run for office in that party. And they screen them at every level, Chuck. They screen them from township trustee all the way up to governor. And they could, you know, of course, they don't screen the presidential contenders. Don't go to county parties unless they're like Summit, where they can raise a couple $1 million going to a county party function.
Sure.
But they usually, they'll screen candidates. And you, when you look at, when you come to your ballot, especially in a primary, depending on which party you're in, and you look at your ballot and you're saying, who are these people? And how'd they get picked? Well, anybody can put their name on the ballot. But what the Central Committee does is they screen and they endorse, so that when you get your slate cards in those counties that do slates, that person's name and picture and information is going to be on that slate card saying this is who the county party endorses and supports. Now, in some small rural counties, that really doesn't amount to a whole lot. But in larger counties, that amounts to a lot, because that county party then spends money on that candidate. They put them on their slate cards when they go to publish it out, and they try to get the rank and file out to the polls to vote for their preferred candidate. So being on a Central Committee does have its advantages if you are politically minded. And I know a number of groups, especially many of our social conservative groups, have spent a number of years trying to convince people of right philosophies with a biblical or Christian worldview to stand and run for these Central Committee seats, because oftentimes, especially in larger counties, many of them are empty because they don't have people in certain precincts who are interested in running, or in some precincts, like you said with Cuyahoga County.
Yeah.
There may only be 3 Republicans in the entire precinct, or 3 Democrats in the entire precinct.
It's sort of like the NHL playoffs. You play all those games the whole year to figure out which 6 teams don't go to the playoffs.
That's right, yeah. Figure out which 6 don't go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Well, that's about the size of it. But, and it's not just in the counties. No, we have 88 counties in Ohio, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, there are 88 county central committees for both the Republicans and the Democrats. They don't miss an opportunity, you know, so even little teeny counties like Vinton and Perry and Van Wert and Defiance and all those have their county party central committees, and they bring their people on board. And you know, and that's, it's almost like a Lions Club or a Rotary for party activists. Now, there's also a state-level committee, Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit different animal. State committee, by law, especially in the Republican Party, which is what I'm going to talk about today, is made up of one man and one woman from each of the 33 Senate districts in Ohio. So we have 33 Senate districts spread out all over Ohio, and you have to elect one male and one female representative, so there's 66 members of the state central committee. Now, they have an executive director. Usually the party, the chairman of the state party is usually involved in some way, although they don't have to be the president or the chairman of the state committee, but they oftentimes are. Now, those state committee seats are highly important, because that's where the endorsements come for the statewide offices, and in certain states like Ohio, for national office.
Mm-hmm.
So your congressman, your United States Senate, and yes, your presidential nominees, all will work state committees in order to get endorsements. That's a lot going on there. Now, you might think, well, okay, that's great, and they all do that. What could be the issue with that? Oh, well,
yeah.
In the last few years, with the rise of the Tea Party movement and the rise of conservatives realizing that these engines of control are out there and have been the people who have been standing at the levers of that engine of control have all been establishment, or what they like to call rhinos in the Republican Party. They see in the Democratic Party it really doesn't happen that way, because Well, they have their own infighting too, but it's on who could be the most liberal. in the Republican Party, it's on who could be the most conservative or the most establishment mainstream. Let's see, we'll call it Main Street or moderate or establishment, or there's a number of names you can call it. But the one that I think most of our listeners are more familiar with is RINO, Republican in name only. Or as you laughed, as we saw in another article, somebody's come up with a new name, Kaiko,
CICO,
which was conservative in campaign only.
Yes, conservative in campaign only.
You know, and it's interesting because I remember histories where, well, just a few years ago, the state party started endorsing in state central committee races. And now they've gone down to where the county parties are endorsing in these races as well. They used to stay out of them. They used to feel that that was a grassroots thing, and the people who won were representative of the rank and file of their party's support base. But now, because the stakes are getting higher, they want to have more control over it. So we have contested primaries with the state parties and the state committees and the county parties endorsing their preferred candidates. Well, it goes a little bit farther than that, Chuck. You would think that in a presidential election you might see this, or in a high-stakes, multi-million-dollar gubernatorial race, you might see these kind of, shall we say, distasteful campaign activities happen.
You are very kind.
I'm trying to be kind right now because I want people to – I want them to make their own determination on this.
Good point.
But what we're seeing now is in the central committee races, especially the state central committee, there are some things going on that, well, ladies and gentlemen, you've just got to hear to believe, okay? And the first thing we're going to be talking about is an article that came out of the Columbus Dispatch, the paper of record for the Capitol. Here a couple of days ago, this was datelined Saturday, March 29th, written by Joe Varden. And the headline read, and when you're political, you catch these headlines. When you're not political, you kind of like bypass them and see, well, what's on sale at the grocery store this week? The article headline says, woman gives up state job to fight for unpaid seat on GOP Central Committee. Okay, let me read that headline again, ladies and gentlemen, so it sinks in. Woman gives up state job to fight for unpaid seat on GOP Central Committee.
This is not just any job either. It's $52,000 a year.
That's right. You see, this woman, and her name is Krista Criddle, and she's from the Cincinnati area. She was working at a $52,000 a year job. Now, how many of us would give up $52,000 a year for an unpaid position? Now, some of us would, because some of us may be, you know, magnanimous in that way, and if it's something to do with our ministry, etc., I can see that. But this is all politics, folks. All right. And this isn't the problem. The thing that's distasteful is her giving up the job. It was the reason why she had to give up the job. You notice I said had to. Because that wasn't in the headline.
No.
But that's the crux of this article. Her $52,000 a year job, ladies and gentlemen, was as a regional representative for Republican state office holder Dave Yost, the state auditor. She was his regional representative. Now, she has been the regional rep for Dave Yost's office since 2011. Okay. So she'd been working there about a little over three years. Okay. Making $52,000 a year, representing the auditor down in the southwestern portion of the state. And each of the statewide offices have regional representatives. They've got somebody on staff that stays in an office somewhere, whether, you know, down in Cincinnati or down in southeastern Ohio, or out in Zanesville, or
so you can call
up in
a regional,
Akron, Cleveland,
you
Toledo.
You can call a regional office to broach some kind of an issue so you don't have to call Columbus.
And go through and have to wait forever to get to it. Okay. So Ms. Criddle, who's about in my age, she's 45. She had worked as this regional rep at $52,000 a year for the last 3 years. Now, she has been on the state Republican Central Committee, Chuck, since January of 2008. So she's held this seat for 6 years, which means, and they're up every 2 years, every even-numbered election cycle year, the state and the local county Central Committee seats are all up for election every 2 years. So that means that she has run at least three. This is her third time on the ballot for this seat, and she's the incumbent. Now, keep that in mind. Okay. So what happened? Well, you see, Auditor Yost basically came to her earlier this year and said, you know what? You can either give up your run for State Central Committee or you can give up working for me. Why would he do that,
yes,
Chuck?
Yes, exactly. Why would he do that?
Here he has someone who's working for him in place on the State Central Committee, a body that will, when he runs for election, which he is doing this year because he's a statewide office holder and he's up for re-election, they would vote on his endorsements. Now, did she vote against him? Of course not. Why? Well, you see, she's got a primary challenger for her State Central Committee seat. Now, remember, she's the second term going into her third term incumbent on this seat and is a rep for the state office holder. Now, Chuck, most state office holders want people on the State Central Committee who are loyal to them. Was Criddle disloyal to Auditor Yost? No, she was not. What happened was Dave Yost found out who was running against her. And the person who filed to run against Criddle for this state Republican Central Committee seat was a lady by the name of Crystal Faulkner. Now, Crystal Faulkner, nobody knows. She's, you know, nobody here knows. Nobody in our audience knows.
Nope.
But if you're political, you do know her because Crystal Faulkner is a big donor. She gives lots and lots of money to the governor. She gives lots of money to Dave Yost.
And appears that she also gives lots of money to
Democrats, yes, as well. She gives money. She has given money to David Pepper, who's running against Republican Mike DeWine for attorney general. Now, this is a person who probably, by all intents and purposes, is not a staunch GOP loyalist.
No, not a staunch conservative by any stretch
of the imagination.
That's one place where we need to go just lightly is that, ladies and gentlemen, we need to get our definitions straight.
Yes, we do.
Because Republican does not equal conservative by any stretch of the imagination.
By any stretch of the imagination, it does not.
And I will say one name to illustrate that, and that's John Kasich.
Oh, yes. Well, let's hold that thought for just a little bit longer because we got more to talk about on the governor.
Yes.
But the point is, Dave Yost came to Ms. Criddle and basically said, you've got to make a choice. You either step down from running against Crystal Faulkner, or you step down from working for me. That makes very little sense until you realize that Faulkner has been giving Dave Yost money as a donor. So he gets the best of all possible worlds if he gets Faulkner on the State Central Committee. He gets somebody who's not only giving money to him, but who obviously supports him. So it's a win-win for him. But his office said, and it's a quote from Yost in this article, said, quote, there were potential and real conflicts of interest between her two positions. Now, Chuck, how is it that all of a sudden, after 3 years of her working in this office and having held the position before she took the job and ran for re-election in that same position while she was holding the job, that all of a sudden now it's a conflict of interest.
Well, the conflict of interest, of course, is between Yost and this donor named Faulkner. That's the real conflict of interest.
Well, yeah, and see there lies the rub. Yes, there's a major conflict right there. As a matter of fact, Yost inserted himself into something and created the appearance of a conflict, but the conflict's not with the incumbent, Krista Criddle, it's with him. You know, this is probably smacks of some of the worst political Machiavellian machinations that the rank and file in the Republican Party are sick of.
This is the kind of log rolling that
political
people cannot
payback.
Stand. Yep.
This is political payback.
Yep.
This is, okay, I got a big money donor who now wants your seat, and so I can't have you working for me anymore. So you got to give up your livelihood if you want to stay involved politically. Chuck, where are we living? You know, this sounds, this does not sound like liberty loving America, Ohio, etc. This sounds like a political machine.
Oh, it is a machine. It is. This is machine politics. And anybody who doesn't think that politics, you know, I always laugh when I hear that we had to reform the patronage laws because it was creating machine politics.
Yeah, what happened to campaign political ethics here? I you know, we had all this stuff, and you know, we always talk about how great we are, and we're going to try to clean up politics and all these ethics issues, and you know, we've got ethics departments. Did Yost not run this past his ethics people at the agency to say, hey, you know, could this be considered a potential problem for me ethically because I'm forcing an employee to have to choose between her job and her outside interests?
You and I both know. Because of a donor? You and I both know if somebody filed an ethics complaint, this would be a major problem for him. He knows full well that a party loyalist is not going to file an ethics complaint against him. Because, A, that poisons the well for her ever being... A, it poisons the well for what she quit the job for, that is getting elected to Central Committee, because that would ensure that she would lose the Central Committee post.
Mm-hmm.
And B, it would ensure that she would never get a job in any kind of a similar position again. So essentially, any hope of an ethics complaint will never be forthcoming unless she's thinking about switching parties.
Yeah, well, you know... Honestly, this one doesn't pass the smell test.
Oh, of course not.
It's terrible. I don't care how high and lofty the auditor wants to claim, well, there was real and potential. Tell us, what were the conflicts? Spell it out. What were the conflicts?
Specifically, what
were the conflicts?
You'll notice
because the only conflict it looks like was between you and your donor.
Now, if we're asking that question... Why didn't Joe Varden, who wrote this article in the Dispatch, ask that question?
That's a good question. I don't know. But you know what? Perhaps they just don't care. Or perhaps it's they're okay with how this game gets played. Now, I wish that weren't the case, but that's probably the reason why we have new media. That's the reason why we have alternative sources of information. That's the reason why you have radio programs like ours. Is to take and ask more of the questions that aren't getting asked by the establishment. You know, Charles, again, this is the reason why people hate politics. This is the reason why cycle after cycle, the party, the Republican Party, is finding it so difficult to get people engaged, to get people excited, to get people out to the polls, to get people to actually help and volunteer, is because the vast majority of people, I think, who are paying any attention whatsoever, look at this kind of stuff and say, that's the reason why I don't want to get involved. That's the reason why I think this whole thing's rigged. That's the reason why I don't think my vote counts. And you know what? They might have a point.
They may have a point. But because this is exactly how, this is the kind of triangulation and log rolling that does force out people who are true conservatives. How they are forced out of the system by the money interests who are moderate. When there is no such thing as a moderate. A moderate is a fence sitter who basically sits there and waits to see which side is going to come out victorious.
And then jumps on that side.
And then jumps on that side. Or liberal. Again, there are no such thing as moderates. A moderate is also someone who sits there and waits to see which position they can take to get the most campaign money.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how the principled people get shoved out of the system. Now, I don't know anything about this Krista Kreidel. However, it appears that she is strongly principled. Giving up a $52,000 a year job, I don't care what kind of money her husband may make.
Right.
Giving up $52,000 a year, you know, $2,200 a month.
Yeah, that hurts.
That's painful.
That's painful. Especially when, first of all, you probably didn't see it coming. And number two, it's really not related to your job performance. This was purely political, Chuck.
Oh, absolutely.
And, I mean, even the auditor's statement really begged the question. He didn't say there was issues with her performance. He said there were conflicts of interest. I'm sorry, was she taking money from... No, wait a minute. That was you taking money from one of the candidates.
Well, okay.
Let's talk
for a minute how Dave Yost ended up being the state auditor rather than the attorney general, which he originally ran for.
Right. He was put up and he was going to run for state attorney general 4 years ago. And then Seth Morgan, who was a state rep at the time, stood to run for auditor.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, Dave Yost is switching seats and running against Seth Morgan, who is a conservative, who would be a Tea Party kind of guy,
yep.
Who was a sitting office holder. And all of a sudden, Dave Yost jumps into this other race. Why? Well, come to find out that the party asked him to do it because they didn't want Seth Morgan in.
They didn't want Seth Morgan in, and they wanted a slot for Mike DeWine.
DeWine to run unopposed.
Who is a liberal. Folks, Mike yep. DeWine is nothing like a conservative. All you have to do is watch how he grandstands, basically jumps on the bandwagon when something comes up that the attorney general can basically get his name in the paper by running roughshod, usually over some poor company who has gotten caught with their neck on the chopping block. Mike DeWine is more than happy to swing the axe.
We'll give it, because Mike would say that he's conservative, okay?
Oh, well,
but again, it depends on which dictionary you're using.
Exactly.
You know, if you're using an objective dictionary, conservative has a much different meaning than if you're using the Republican playbook political dictionary.
Well, how did Mike DeWine lose his job as a United States Senator? It wasn't because he was too conservative.
No, it was not. It was because he was extremely liberal and he supported things like gay rights.
And things like bad judges.
That's right. He was part of the Gang of Eight.
He was part of the Gang of Eight.
But this really isn't so much about Mike, but that's how Dave Yost became auditor. And the party shifted, actually, because the sitting auditor at the time was Mary Taylor, who's now the lieutenant governor.
Right.
And when Mary Taylor was picked to be lieutenant governor, amazing how the money she had raised for an auditor's run, which she was going to run for re-election, went over to Dave Yost. Wow, isn't that something? There's money trails 4 years ago on this. Okay. But anyhow, that's enough of that. But, you know, Yost can do what he needs to do with his own office staff, and that's fine. But when it becomes just about politics and donors, I'll tell you, Dave, you're not helping the case for the Republican Party to go out and parade as the party of conservatism, or the party with, if you remember a couple of years ago, all of the flyers, the little slug on it said, that they have Tea Party values.
Tea Party values. You're not seeing that so much these days.
No. Now they're trying to run away from the Tea Party and trying to excoriate those who would be considered. Matter of fact, they're trying to make it a pejorative that if you are in any way associated with the Tea Party, then somehow you're unfit for office. Well, you know, Chuck, this gets us right over to what we were going to talk about today. And that is an article that came out of the American Thinker, one of your favorite places to go for information. And I like it, too, a little bit. But this is by an article by an author by the name of Mark Skoda, who, called Elephants, Rhinos, and, yes, in the biblical term, Jackasses. And he's talking about the Tea Party. Now, Mr. Skoda, just for a little bit, you did a little bit of backgrounding on him. He kind of self-professes to be one of the leading voices for the Tea Party, right?
Self-professed.
Okay, well, yeah, many of those are. But you see, Skoda's article here in the American Thinker, which was posted on April the 3rd, which actually is today as we're recording this, so when you hear it on Saturday a couple days ago, and we'll have the link up on the website at principledpolicy.com for you to look at when we put up the audio. He's talking about his discontent with the Tea Party movement and how it's so sad and unfortunate and tragic that they're marginalizing themselves. Because, why? they're not willing to swallow the Kool-Aid, kumbaya, and support establishment Republicans. Chuck, I'm sorry, but do you remember why the Tea Party movement actually got started in the first place? It was because people were sick of the establishment Republicans.
Yeah.
This wasn't about the Democrats, ladies and gentlemen. The Tea Party movement was a GOP response. It was not about Democrats. Now, do they have concerns about the principles and philosophies of Democratic office holders? Sure they do. But their bigger concern is about the philosophical and principles of philosophical positions and principles of their own party. Now, granted, I understand the Tea Party movement. It's not a GOP monolith, although the GOP would like it to be, but we're going to talk about right. that in a minute. It's made up of folks who are also independent, libertarian-minded, CP, Constitution Party kind of type mentality folks that are part
small,
of the Tea Party.
Small L libertarians.
Small L libertarians. Yeah. Well, even some of the big
some
L libertarians.
Some of the big L libertarians, a few, yeah.
But what you really have is this was a movement really that kind of kicked off in 2008 that really had caught fire because it was speaking to a segment of the voting population that the party was not speaking to. As a matter of fact, had quit speaking to. Because yeah. they were too busy running after the Crystal Faulkners of the world and their money. And that is rank and file, social and fiscal conservatives who just want to be left alone by most government so that they can raise their families, worship as they see fit, run their businesses without owing 99% of it to the government, and just farming their farms, engaging in their local commerce and, you know, enjoying the fruits of their own labors and keeping their guns. That's really, in a nutshell, what the Tea Party movement's all about.
And clinging to their God.
Well, yes, absolutely that too. That's true. But you see, Skoda is upset because he said during the 2012 election cycle, he was a big Herman Cain supporter. And of course, when Cain had his meltdown, the impropriety meltdown, Skoda just expected that, you know, through his thought leadership, Chuck, because he is the thought leader of the Tea Party movement, that they would just be able to transfer all of their love and support and the principles that the Tea Party movement stands for to Mitt Romney. Now, I'm sorry, but Mr. Skoda, that means that you totally misread the entire movement to start with, or you intentionally had another agenda that you're trying to push them toward.
And that becomes clear when you see that Mark Skoda was one of the guys behind the quote-unquote first quote-unquote Tea Party convention, first national
right.
Tea Party convention, where, in fact, groups like Tea Party Express were expressly discriminated against, shall we say.
Yes,
weren't allowed to attend.
Yeah.
So, essentially, Mark Skoda has worked to exclude true Tea Party candidates and work against them, in fact, helped sabotage campaigns of Tea Partiers in the last election cycle, and still considers himself a quote-unquote thought leader.
Mm-hmm.
His own words, he's a thought leader in the Tea Party.
Okay. Well, what he says in his article is because they had this big meeting after Herman Cain's meltdown to try to get all these Tea Party folks to back Mitt Romney. And he said, quote, "What ensued during that meeting was remarkable in what it didn't achieve." Well, it's only remarkable to him, I think. "The visceral and open anger toward a Romney bid was palpable." Well, that should have been his first clue.
Yeah.
Okay. And he keeps going. "There was very little talk about defeating Obama." Yes. And how did Romney do on that, ladies and gentlemen? I don't think he did very well.
Right.
Okay. It said, in fact, most of the time was spent by folks complaining about the quote unquote establishment Republicans and their grievances with the party. Yes, and the reason why the Tea Party movement was formed in the first place, Mr. Skoda, their problems with establishment Republicans and their grievances with the Republican Party, which you hope that they would just, because the other guy was so bad, just put a lid on.
Yeah.
And back Mitt Romney.
Take our bad candidate to replace the really, really bad candidate.
In other words, sit down, shut up, and get on the bus. That's
okay.
What he was basically saying.
And basically, it was take the guy who's going to drive the car over the cliff at 35 rather than the guy who's going to drive the car over the cliff at 80.
And whether you backed Mitt Romney or not in 2012, that's up to you. But that was a train wreck waiting to happen. But Skoda had been on this train before because he admits in the article that he backed Romney in 2008 as well.
Yeah.
So he kind of had an agenda going into this. So he says here, the rest is history, and without a groundswell of endorsements by Tea Party leaders everywhere, we ended up with 4 more years of Obama. Okay, thank you, Mr. Skoda. You just unintentionally hat-tipped to the fact that the Tea Party movement actually has gravitas. It is connecting with voters, and their endorsements mean something.
Right. He's failing to do what he set out to do, that's undermine the Tea Party movement that he has left, essentially.
Yeah.
And instead said, well, you're just trying to put them in the wacko corner.
Well, and he tries that. He goes, the Tea Party would have mattered in what it could have done. All past tense, of course. He says, to turn a phrase, I didn't leave the Tea Party left me. Yes, they did. And you know when that happened, Mark? It didn't happen in 2012. It happened the day the Tea Party movement formed.
Yes, exactly.
While you were stumping for Mitt Romney in 2008, they were out looking for a candidate who was actually fiscally and socially conservative.
Which Mitt Romney, look, the bottom line here is, Mitt Romney was not pro-life, despite what we were told. Mitt Romney was pro-socialized healthcare, because everybody remembers, he was one of the architects of the quote-unquote Massachusetts miracle, which has turned into a Massachusetts disaster.
And was also the spawning ground for Obamacare.
For Obamacare. And he was not pro-traditional marriage, as it was touted. There was gay marriage in Massachusetts precisely because Mitt Romney ordered it by an executive order.
Exactly. A lot of people don't realize that.
Right.
Now, but Skoda keeps going, Chuck. I mean, you and I both know the answer to this logic question. When you find yourself in a hole, what's the first thing you do? Stop digging. Mr. Skoda didn't get that piece of information. He keeps digging. So he goes on here, and I reflect on the current state of affairs this election cycle. So now he's upset in 2014. He's just previously, by linking to a Gallup poll saying that the Tea Party favorability falls to lowest point. Yes, they do, because establishment Republicans are out there trying desperately to negate any kind of influence the Tea Party folks have on anything. Karl Rove, Steve LaTourette, do those names ring bells to our listeners? These are all GOP establishment, rhino, leftist, you can call them moderates if you want to, but they're
not
liberals.
Moderates, they're liberals.
They're liberals who are using millions and millions and millions of dollars and media to try to exterminate Tea Party candidates and Tea Party elected officials.
Well, first of all, this is a Gallup poll.
Yes, which is questionable.
Very
on its face.
Problematic. Right up front, how was the question asked?
Doesn't matter. The point is, Skoda is using it because it fits his meme.
It fits his meme, yeah.
But he goes here about this whole thing, and he's like, and I'm amazed at the visceral comments about sitting Republicans. He just showed his cards.
Yep.
As long as they're an incumbent, we got to get behind them. And he keeps going with this, and he says, we should temper that anger. Well, not some of it's not well-deserved, but there still are incumbents. We're still all bleeding Republican, aren't we? Now, I just saw something the other day that possibly the GOP is switching their color scheme, so they want the Democrats to be the communist red, and they want to take over blue.
I wondered about that. When that first started in 2000, I'm like, why would you paint the Republicans red?
Yeah, exactly. But anyhow, so they're coming around to that. But he's all upset because in Mississippi, where he lives, Thad Cochran, who's a sitting senator, is getting beat up by the Tea Party because, well, he goes and pulls in a bunch of, as Skoda calls it, bringing home the bacon for the state, because they get $2 of federal spending for every dollar in federal taxes they pay. They're called a receiver state. Now, other states are called donor states. That means that when they pay in federal taxes statewide, what they get back from the feds is less than what they pay in.
All I can say is go Ohio.
Go Ohio, that's right. Okay, so he says that basically, we should temper the anger with a pragmatic and informed point of view. And Mr. Skoda is going to help us along because he's pragmatic and he's informed, obviously. And what he's pragmatic about is incumbent good, challenge bad, supposedly. And what he's informed about is, well, you should listen to me because I'm the self-proclaimed thought leader of the Tea Party movement.
He's the thought leader, yeah.
And he starts talking about how poor it is in the Delta and everything and da-da-da. He's making excuses for why they get a lot of federal dollars, okay? And then he keeps going. He's like, I am socially and fiscally uber conservative. Now, there's a red flag alert right there.
That's right.
When somebody uses the term common sense conservative, uber conservative, you got a problem because they're saying something that has no fixed meaning, except in their own mind. Uber conservative to him is back the incumbents, and it's okay as long as the situation calls for it for you to be a big tax and spender. Because that's really what he's getting down to, because that's what Cochran's getting beat up about in Mississippi during his run. So, you know, he goes that, oh, well, you know, the Democrat, and then he switches. Chuck, it's the old historic meme of the establishment. Look at the Democrats over there. Look how bad they are. Look how bad the Dems are. Okay, folks, are the Dems bad? Most of them, yes. Many of them, probably not. Matter of fact, you know, when I worked down at State House, I talked to a lot of Democrats. With the exception of a small handful of issues that they know if they came out on the wrong side on, their party would do to them what the Tea Party's doing to Republicans. They are thoughtful people. They are people who don't like taxing and spending as much as possible. Now, not all of them are that way. Many of them are not. But then again, there are many Republicans who are major tax and spenders and whatever. As long as we got the levers of power, we should have all the control. There are a number of conservatives who are like, no, limited government and lower taxes and let the free market
but
work.
But how are they treated even in the Ohio State Legislature, which is supposedly conservative?
Let me think. They don't get the endorsements from their own caucus and from Central Committee, who was told not to endorse three of them, who are returning incumbents who are all actual what we would consider movement conservatives. And by movement conservatives, we mean they get it. They believe in limited government and lowering taxes and reducing spending and keeping our freedoms and honoring our God. That's what they believe.
Yeah.
They don't believe that government is savior or the be-all and end-all or the final answer to every Jeopardy question.
Well, in other words, it's okay to knife a Tea Partier or a true conservative in the back, but it's bad to knife, even if they're an incumbent, it's okay to knife a true conservative, but it's bad to knife a liberal Republican incumbent.
One of the establishment-blessed candidates. Yeah,
so that's a different story.
Yeah. Now, I think it's hilarious because he keeps going. So he throws in this whole paragraph and a half all about how horrible the Democrats are, which really is a non sequitur to what he's really talking about. He says, well, however, the Tea Party, which started out with real conservative values focused on positive change. Well, okay. Hold that thought, ladies and gentlemen, because I want to tell you how he like undoes what he just said. Now becomes the adversary of incumbent Republicans everywhere. And Chuck, that means that the Tea Party has stuck to its principles. That means they haven't had mission creep. They haven't grown in power and in office. They're still focused on those real conservative values based on positive change, and one of the most positive changes is getting rid of rhinos out of office who are doing the damage. That's what it's about. But not to Skoda.
Well, Democrats are bad, but Republicans who act like Democrats are good.
I get that.
That's what Skoda's saying.
Yeah, that's really where he's getting down to. And he says, personally, I believe this is due to the fact that the Tea Party was purely secular in its early days. No, it wasn't.
No, it was not.
No, it wasn't. Honestly, were there some libertarians who were involved and was one of the first things they started talking about gun rights? Sure. And taxes? Sure. Are those purely secular issues? Not on your life, bud.
No.
People of faith believe in having more of our money to give charitably and to practicing our Second Amendment rights and defending our families. We all believe that, and defending our churches these days, you know, comparatively speaking. But, you know, he's trying to paint this picture that, well, the Tea Party started off just purely secular. No, you and I both say this publicly. The Tea Party started out with the seeds of its own destruction sown into it because it was an admixture.
Yes.
Between conservative, evangelical and Catholic, Republicans, and secularist, both Republicans and independents and small party organizations.
Uh-huh.
But the one thing they had in common is neither one of them were big government. Neither one of them was openly antagonistic to faith and religious liberties. And neither one of them thought for a moment that the GOP was the only way to go. That's the reason why the Tea Party movement started forming. Did they want to reform the GOP? Yeah, sure they did.
You bet they did.
You know, fool's errand, but hey, you know, that's the way it goes. And that's my own personal opinion, not SCOTUS, because he believes that, you know, the GOP is moving right along just fine because our incumbent Republicans are doing a great job, well, for the most part. So he says, today we find angry attacks against incumbent Republicans, not from the left, but from the right. Really? You know, Chuck, I'm sorry, is this a news flash? I mean, the American Thinker online, AmericanThinker.com, actually wasted bandwidth and column space to let him write this.
The American Thinker is a mixed bag at best.
Well, that's true.
Sometimes they run things from people that run the spectrum. Now, sometimes things are intelligent, and sometimes things that get written are muddled.
Uh-huh.
or illogically muddy. This is, for someone who touts himself as the Tea Party's thought leader, this guy is basically touting propaganda as fact and thinking that he's getting away with it.
Now, he kind of wraps this up in the last two paragraphs, and we will too, because it's just too funny to keep going. And he says, what the Tea Party, he said, basically these attacks, rhino hunting becomes the call to arms. Well, it always has been the call to arms,
yes,
Chuck.
Always.
Always in the Tea Party movement. And he says, what the Tea Party seems to miss, and he's going to help us to see it so we don't miss it anymore, Chuck, is that those Republicans, that's rhinos, with all their failings, will at least talk with us.
What?
What he's saying, Chuck, is they're going to give us a seat at the table.
And we're going to get a seat at the table where we'll be basically be fed
scraps. Scraps.
Mashed potatoes and anything that basically can be ground into soft pablum that we can be spoon-fed.
That's so what he's wanting is the seat at the table. And he says they are, after all, aligned with the Tea Party and conservatives through the Republican platform. Now, that is where I fell down and started holding my sides, yeah, and laughing uproariously.
The platform.
This is the same platform that here in Ohio, the state GOP Central Committee has not adopted. And the party, then the GOP in Ohio refuses to adopt the Republican Party platform.
Yeah, because it's too pro-life.
And too pro-marriage.
And too pro-marriage.
And too pro-limited government.
Yeah.
Because why? Those rhinos didn't win at the last convention, and they had a massive, and I think most of our listeners will remember this because it made lots and lots of news, and we even talked about it on this program.
Yes, we did.
The massive, nasty fight over the platform committee.
Yeah, where people were kept out of the room so they couldn't vote, out of the hall so they couldn't vote on it.
That's right. So, but they lost on that one because of the backlash from Tea Party conservatives.
Which is why the stuff like this is being written.
Yes, now, because they're desperate. The establishment is desperate. Now, listen to what Skoda continues on and says. He says, but that's the point. Instead of hunting rhinos and elephants, we should be slaughtering jackasses. In other words, it's all about the Democrats, guys. We just need to go and worry about the Democrats. Don't worry about these guys in our own party. Just worry about the Democrats. Look over here. Do I have something in this hand over here that can make you forget what's in this hand over here? You know, it's the old illusionist trick.
Yeah.
Or the old fundraiser, show them a devil. Well, the devil is the Democratic Party. Oh, don't worry about our guys over here. Well, you know, we're all cut from the same cloth, really. And he keeps going. And this guy's hilarious. He's like, okay. He says, they're the real problem facing the Tea Party movement. No, they're not, Chuck.
No, they're
Democrats
not.
Democrats are not the real problem facing the Tea Party movement. Guys like Mark Skoda and the rhinos that he wants to support are the ones who are the problem.
And let's go back for a minute. How did John Boehner refer to the Tea Partiers? Well, on the Tonight Show.
I think he used that same word we just used, right, starting with a J.
Jackass. He called him jackass.
On national television.
Let's be clear about that. You know, some people might think that that's a curse word or something. Okay, it's a male donkey.
Yeah, male donkeys. That's it's right.
And a female donkey, I know I'll get a kick from our studio audience here. A female donkey is called a Jenny.
Yes.
So.
No kick forthcoming.
No kick right now.
Okay, but I will give him one piece of credit, okay? He said in here in his closing paragraph about them being, well, if you have a real beef with your representative, replace him. Well, yeah, that's what they're trying to
do,
kidding.
Mark. That's sort of a duh.
But do so by offering a vision that is broader and better. Broadness has been the problem with the Republican Party.
Yeah.
They're becoming too big tent. That's the big problem. That, you know, what we call it, the wigging of the Republican Party.
Well, let's talk about what that means, wigging. The Whig Party, from its inception in around 1828,
right,
was a coalition party.
Yes, it was.
It was the remnants of the people who didn't fit into what at the time was called the Democratic Party.
Right.
That was Andrew Jackson, and Andrew Jackson proved to be a political organizer with genius. He and his vice president, who was Martin Van Buren, who one of my favorite presidents, by the way, and nobody's ever heard of him except me. But the Whigs were such a weird amalgamation of movements that were kind of contradictory.
Yes.
That by about 1850,
they were starting to see cracks in the foundation.
They were breaking apart, and by 1856, they were done.
Right, and that's the reason why you had Abraham Lincoln and the Republicans coming up in 1856 and then later in 1859 becoming President of the United States under the newly split off from the Whigs Republican Party.
Well, what's interesting about that, a lot of people don't understand that Abraham Lincoln got elected with 34% of the vote.
That's right.
The other
Bill Clinton wasn't the only one who got in with the plurality.
The other 66% were split among Democrats who basically were in more or less in agreement, except on the question of whether the states had the right to secede or not.
Right.
And also the slavery question. So, and it was a relatively mild disagreement, but nonetheless, they split over it into three different candidates, three different parties over that. And that allowed Abraham Lincoln to walk into the White House with 0% of the vote in the South because he wasn't even on the ballot. So, you know, this is what threatens to happen to the Republican Party, the party that replaced the Whigs.
Mm-hmm.
It looks to me really like the Republican Party is just on the verge of being Whigified.
It's getting close. Now, and Skoda finishes this incredibly bad article by saying, you know, okay, remember, you might not win the election. Well, Chuck, if the Tea Party movement understands we're going to try to win the election, but if we can take the rhino out, even if it means wandering in the wilderness for a cycle, message delivered. He says, all too often, the Tea Party has floated lousy candidates based on nothing more than pure emotionalism. And that's where I have an issue with the Tea Party. They're starting to act like the establishment Republicans.
Here's the problem, though. I think what he's calling lousy candidates are, for instance,
Principled candidates.
There were some problems in I think that candidate that ran in Nevada was a problem.
Uh-huh.
I can't think of her name.
Sharon Angle. Yeah.
However, in Indiana, one guy makes a misstatement, and it's turned into a national campaign by the Republican Party
and Mitt Romney,
and
who the standard bearer, who Mark Skoda still wants to have run in the 16th cycle, I believe.
Basically, pro-abort Mitt basically killed a Tea Party candidate in Indiana who was pro-life. There was another candidate,
Todd Akin in Missouri,
again, pretty good candidate who got
misquoted by the media, and then instead of working because we need to be broader and better, the establishment rhinos gored the Tea Party guy in order to kill him and allow the Democrat to take the seat.
And they did the same thing in Nevada with Angle.
Yes, they did.
And they did the same thing in Delaware.
Yep.
With can't think of her name, another woman.
Yes, I'm okay. Well, it'll,
so much for the year of the woman.
Well, so much for this whole idea of, we're all cut from the same cloth and we're all part of the same party. And as he says that, you know, we're all aligned with the Tea Party and conservatives through the Republican platform. The same platform that these establishment guys don't want to support.
And and we've explained the reasons why. This is not shocking that someone like Mark Skoda, who's the thought leader in the Tea Party, and actually he says himself he's not in the Tea Party anymore. And
I'm sure the Tea Party is very happy that that's the case.
Yeah. This is the kind of thing that the Tea Party is going to have to be very careful about letting guys like this get into leadership positions, because this guy started out in a leadership position. People should have known that when he supported Mitt Romney in 2008 and undoubtedly was an enthusiastic John McCain supporter in 2008, he was not the Tea Party. He has never been the Tea Party.
No, not in any way, shape, or form. Well, okay, folks, and here, to kind of close out, because we've only got a couple of minutes left, another one of those, we're all cut from the same cloth kind of things. Here's an article that came out. This was on the 24th of March. We were going to get to it earlier, but we had to do a pre-record for last week's program, showing Governor John Kasich going to Las Vegas to speak at a big money GOP event. Now, he's not running for president, remember this, okay, because he said that publicly. That, you know, he's worried about everything going on here. So he went to Nevada to go to this major retreat of high-powered Republicans hosted by casino magnate Sheldon Adelson. Now, where's Adelson's name familiar? Adelson was giving buku millions of dollars to a Republican presidential contender in 2012. Do you remember who? Newt Gingrich.
Yep, he was a big Gingrich supporter.
He's a big Gingrich guy. Now, it's interesting because we did a little research on Adelson and others. Adelson has the same kind of big money GOP establishment issue that a guy like Paul Singer does. And that is, he supports getting the GOP to embrace homosexual marriage.
Yeah.
Along with, you know, expanding his business interests.
Well, not only that, expanding gambling, which is turning out to be not such a great thing for the state. Yeah, there's money coming in, but what's the damage going out? We really won't see that whole picture for another 8 or so years. But nonetheless, this idea that Kasich went to talk to these guys, but he's not really running for president.
Right.
Well, you know, on that story that we talked about at the beginning about Krista Crittle.
Yes.
There is a little story on the side, the Daily Briefing and the Dispatch. And I'll put that out there as well. Kasich does well in national presidential poll.
Of course he does.
Yeah. Now, I haven't read the story, so I don't know who did the poll, how it was conducted. But the fact is, John Kasich is running for president. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah, well, the gubernatorial run is just kind of a warm up on the road here, because honestly, this one's a slam dunk unless, you know, he has a major imbroglio between
meltdown
now and November. But so who else was at this event? Okay, the other invited non-running candidates: Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, Scott Walker from Wisconsin. Those were the other three, along with Kasich. Now, who was he paired with? Now, this event was a 4-day event hosted at the Venetian Resort and Hotel, which Adelson owns, by the Republican Jewish Coalition. Okay? John Kasich shared a panel and a VIP reception, rubbing shoulders with Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
Who else was there? Ari Fleischer, who was George Bush's press secretary.
Yeah.
If this isn't a lineup to vet who they believe to be the front contenders for the Republican nomination, to see who the continuing machine is getting behind, I don't know what is. So, ladies and gentlemen, just wait. The announcement will become. I'm sure that they're going to have to be, you know, humble about it and wait until after the gubernatorial election.
Yeah, unfortunately,
but it's coming.
Kasich has to get reelected first, which looks like basically a shoe-in at this point.
Yeah, that's a walkover.
Having used the political machine once again to broom away all possible challenges, Charlie Earle. The
who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, who'd have thunk it? Yeah, who'd have believed that? We all knew it was going to happen. But that being said, he is running for president. Okay, we are out of time for today. We ask that you would join us again next week on Principles and Policies. And if you want more information on this, want to hear this show or see the articles, go to www.principledpolicy.com.